traffic.
Live and local on AM 770 KTTH. Your independent conservative host, Todd Herman, welcomes you to The Todd Herman Show.
Today is, in fact, the day the Lord has made, and these are the times through which God has decided we shall live. Times such as these are a time of choosing on a temporal basis, one side stacking lie upon lie. On a spiritual basis, there is one side of the spiritual equation who lives on lies. This morning, midweek, I want to take a look at this choice by examining Christianity through the lens of a skeptical, atheist, cold case detective, hardened detective, skeptical, atheist in his heart, decided to apply his skills as the world's best, in fact, probably most well-known cold case detective we've ever had. You've seen him on an array of TV shows. He is a very successful author, widely quoted, and a former atheist whose detective work brought him to faith. J. Warner Wallace, welcome to the Todd Herman Show.
Hey, thanks so much for I've been looking forward to talking to you, so thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate that. I hope I don't disappoint you too horribly. let's start with this. You were a cold case detective and a cop. And did you have any idea when you were a cop and an atheist? And I think it's fair to say maybe even antagonistic towards us bitter clingers to our Bibles and our guns, or at least our Bibles. Did you have any idea that you were building the architecture and the edifice that would allow you to examine faith in the way that you do in Person of Interest?
No, it's all happened so organically. I mean, I was not this was in Los Angeles County where I just was raised and didn't know any Christians. The only Christians I would bump into were years later when I was working as a detective, and they were folks who either, number one, were police officers who were not really equipped to defend what they believed about Jesus, although they were very willing to defend what they believed about that suspect or about that case they're working. So I just thought, what's the sense here? Why can't you do it both ways? And then the other people I was bumping into were the folks who were getting arrested. I remember taking a bank robber to jail after I had just watched him do, I was on a surveillance team. I had just watched him do a bank robbery, and I get him in the back of the car and I'm driving him to jail, and he's telling me about his conversion story. And I'm just thinking to myself, okay, look, so here are these nutty Christians, right? Either they don't know why what they believe is true, they can't defend it, or they don't act as though it's true. And neither one of those were attractive to me. I just thought it was fantasy.
Yeah. And so I think a lot of people take that point of view. I think there's also, I worked in tech, J. Warner Wallace, and a lot of really smart people in tech will say things like, well, I can't get into black box design. And so that way I won't look at intelligent design. And I do finally get some of them to at least admit that the odds of all this being created through random mutation, they're too steep. They can't cross over to, but then a God would do this. They're not able to cross that chasm. And where I've been successful is saying, so you admit that something designed this, but then doesn't care about us.
Yeah.
And it's a different world. So cops, tech guy, walk different paths to faith. Our friends, mutual friends, sent me your book, and I looked at it, and the title, Person of Interest, I mean, it really drew me in. You looked at the Messiah, Christ Jesus, as a person of interest, but with no body, and you tried to stay outside of the New Testament for evidence. Why did you choose to make it so hard?
So I know that sounds crazy, but a lot of it, I just didn't trust what the New Testament told me. So I went through a period of time where I was testing the New Testament documents to see if they were reliable eyewitness accounts. But I had a sense that, look, if Jesus was as this pastor, first time I ever walked into an evangelical church, he said that Jesus was the smartest man who ever lived. And that's really what that one sentence is what provoked me to buy the Bible to begin with. And then as I'm reading through the scriptures, I'm trying to figure out, okay, is this really reliable? Did this really happen in the first century? But I also had a sense that, look, wouldn't you expect that if Jesus is who he said he was, I should be able to make a case for this without, and I didn't trust the New Testament largely. So I needed to know. Now look, pardon me. I've worked at cases that are no-body murders, you know, where you have somebody like a man who kills his wife, and then he claims that she ran off, and then nobody works it as a murder. And by the time I pick it up 5 years later as a cold case, and all cold cases are murders. So I pick it up and I'm like, okay, well, did they ever take any photographs of the crime scene? No. They thought it was a missing person, and he's moved, and they've remodeled the house, and there's no body and there's no evidence. Well, how do you make a case like this in front of a jury? Well, here's how you do it. You say, look, on the day that she went missing, if it is a murder, something explosive happened, but every bomb is preceded by a fuse that burns up to the explosion. And once that bomb detonates, there's shrapnel all over the blast radius. We can tell you what happened on the day the bomb exploded by simply demonstrating for you the fuse, which usually will implicate her killer. Yeah. And then the fallout of the bomb explosion, which should also implicate her killer. Well, if Jesus is who he said he was, even if I didn't trust the New Testament at all, shouldn't I be able to make a case for him from the fuse and the fallout of history? I mean, after all, something happened in the first century that changed our calendars. You know, what is it? Why would I trust that Jesus is really who he said he was? I should be able to demonstrate this if he really is who he said he was without referencing the New Testament. And that's what we did in this book.
I found that interesting as well. And in fact, inspiring that in your book, Person of Interest, you admit, well, I don't think it's the thing to admit. You admit your atheism, but you also are open about the antagonism you felt towards Christians and what C.S. Lewis had called soft soap Christianity. Mm-hmm. This is bad Sunday school theology. Sunday school theology is, and who do we thank if the cookies turn out well? And the kids reluctantly raise their hand. Yes, Julian back. Is it Jesus? My daughter had said that was actually, she went through a period of questioning her faith. Thank God she decided to become baptized again. But she said that was the thing, one of the things that got her. So this soft soap Christianity, you definitely didn't walk that path. In the book, I love Jim Warner Wallace is with us, that you take us through a cold case example, of a murder. You mentioned a man who murdered his wife. That's such a great thing because I think so many people are fascinated by true crime to get into your head and why you are the best cold case detective or one of the very best, because you came up with a system. I want to get into that system. I want to apply it to Christ. I want to mention the fact that your wife helped you down this path of conversion. But I also want to just ask you flat out, you know, when you decided to walk down this and to examine these things as no cops, not tough, no cops, not skeptical, no cop has gotten away from life without seeing the worst of the worst. Did you fully anticipate that you were going to destroy the belief that Christ Jesus was the Messiah, or were you open-minded?
Well, okay. Well, and I always say it this way. I have a good friend, Lee Strobel, who wrote a book called Case for Christ, and his wife, Leslie, got saved first. And so he really was on a mission to disprove Leslie's newfound belief. And as Susie, my wife was not a Christian either. We were both examining this rather neutrally. And to be honest, I thought this was so stupid. I mean, who spends time trying to disprove Peter Pan? Look, you might gain some knowledge from the story of Peter Pan, but you're not going to think that it's true. And I thought, okay, this, if Jesus is so smart, even if he's just a mythological character, or he was really an ancient sage who never really worked miracles, but he had some smart things to say. Well, I was willing to listen to those smart things. That's all I was doing here. I really did not. And now look, here's the problem though. If the things he says are true and the stuff he did actually occurred, that's going to take another step away from just, well, what is a fortune cookie Jesus, right? What are the wise sayings of Jesus? So in the end, I ended up someplace I didn't expect to be, but it wasn't like I was fed up with, just to be honest, cops see all the stupid in the world. And I'm pretty distrusting. Everyone's a liar until you prove me otherwise. I'm skeptical of everybody. I'm pretty pessimistic. If you talk to my friends who are also speakers or talk about Christianity, they'll tell you, oh yeah, if you ask Jim, you're just going to get the negative side of things, you know, but that's okay. And that's who I am. But I just, that's my approach. So I assumed up front, this is mythology. It's not history. I assume that. And I wasn't like angry about it or trying to disprove Jesus. But no one disproves the Loch Ness monster. I mean, I'm not interested in that. So I felt like this is kind of in the same category. But as I'm reading through it, and I realized not only that the scriptures were reliable, and that's another book, but I realized that this dude had an impact on history that no dude should have. It changed the way I saw him, right? Because if we're talking about not just that he impacted everything we're doing and thinking about today stands on the shoulders of Jesus and his followers. It really does. And if you don't think it does, it's because you haven't studied the history of the things that matter most to us. Yeah. Even as an atheist, the stuff that mattered most to me was probably because I was an artist before I became a police officer. It's a weird combination, I know. Yeah. But you know, it was arts, it was music, it was literature, education, science. Well, you would have none of those things as you experience them today if it wasn't for a worldview initiated by this ancient sage. Really, this dude is the dude who changes your calendar. Go back and look at every single person who lived in the first century, his contemporaries. Many of them were global leaders or poets or whatever. Yeah. They had no impact on history like this small peasant who lived in some meaningless little town and then moved to another meaningless little town and never traveled more than 200 miles, never had a family of his own, never led an army, led a nation, wrote a poem, wrote a sonnet, wrote a concert, never had a social media platform. This is the dude who changes history. Well, if this is just a guy, that seems strange. But if he is the God of the universe who stepped into his creation, this starts to make a little more sense.
Yes. And I want to get to that. We're going to do a quick check of traffic with Right Way Traffic. We'll continue with the J. Warner Wallace. J. Warner Wallace is with us. Our mutual friend, Frank Terek, great Christian apologist, great businessman on ethics. Sent me Jay Warner's latest book. It is Person of Interest, a cop, a cold case detective, examines the fuse that led to the resurrection and then the after effect of the resurrection of Christ Jesus. There's not time to dig into the book. It's an easy read, by the way, because it's written so accessibly, and you throw in this cold case example, so people have to find out what happens. So I want to go through one of the fuse points that really interested me, and it had to do with travel and language. Mm-hmm. That you asked yourself a question, J. Warner Wallace: if Christ was God, why did he choose that time? And why did he choose an era with the Romans in charge? And that was part of your fuse building to start to examine this. So why did he choose that time?
Well, think about it. I mean, there's three aspects of the fuse, and one of them is exactly what you said. It's this cultural fuse. Is it interesting that he does appear when he does and where he appears? Because if he appears, 500 years on either side of that, he doesn't have the kind of impact probably that he has when he appears. You might ask, well, why doesn't he appear today? Well, think about it. If he appeared today and you saw someone on social media who's like working visual miracles, would you be all that impressed? I mean, I'm seeing that every day, right? You'd be a number of noisy environment, a noisy voices. He'd just be another voice in the noisy voices. But when he appears, it turns out he appears at a time when, number one, the Etruscan alphabet had been adopted by the one empire that began to rule the world, the Roman Empire. Common language was now being spread throughout the Roman world. On technology, papyrus that wasn't available in antiquity now is available to write down what happened if you saw something. And more importantly, the stability that the Roman Empire provided a period of peace called the Pax Romana. And in that period of peace, the Romans were able to reappropriate their spending away from war toward the infrastructure of roads. And as a matter of fact, they wanted their machines of war to eventually be able to go straight roads. So they became tunnel builders. They didn't go around mountains, they went through them. They didn't go around streams or rivers, they went across them. So more bridges and tunnels and roads. That's why that expression, all roads lead to Rome, that expression is pretty much true. And by the way, those are the roads that Paul walked when the word that he was spreading in the book of Acts was so accessible to the known empire, because there was now a way to access all of those regions. Even the Silk Road from Asia was now connected to the Roman Empire. So it turns out he comes in that period of time in the Pax Romana, when all of the stuff's available to write about him, the technology, the language, the alphabet, and the infrastructure is in place for the message of Jesus to travel. So this is, to me, just one aspect, right? Now, there's two other aspects. And when you overlap all of these, you will see there is a window of opportunity. I call it a red zone in criminal cases. And I discuss this in the book. I show why Tammy Hayes was killed when she was, because there's a small red zone of opportunity for the killer. Well, there's a red zone opportunity for something to change in history that spans from about 29 BC to about 70 AD. And who do you think arrives right in the middle of that? Jesus of Nazareth. So this is why when Paul talks about Jesus arriving in the fullness of time, he's not just talking about this in a poetic way. There's actually a fulfillment. The fullness of time is actually a window of opportunity in which something can change the world forever.
It's a remarkable way to say it. J. Warner Wallace is with us. The book, latest book is called Person of Interest. We've got about 5 minutes left. One thing you just did, you're a gifted teacher. You are a gifted communicator. God has gifted you with something. You were pointing out that if Christ were to come now, and those of us who are Christ followers believe he will come again, mm-hmm. but it can't be photoshopped. You read the book of Revelations,
that's
Brother
right.
Wallace, you're not photoshopping that.
No, you're not.
And no one's going to miss it.
Yeah.
It's going to be global. No one's going to mistake
that's
that.
Right.
No one's going to think, oh, someone's funning me. I'm getting punked. Right.
Right. So right, right.
You also in your book, there's the fuse. It leads up to the crucifixion. And
yes.
We don't have time to dig into all the fuse. I want to get one thing from you, two pieces, 2.5 minutes left or roughly. Number one, you turn to non-Christian witnesses.
Yes.
In the book, a lot of people don't think there's non-Christian witnesses.
Oh, there are a ton of non-Christian voices in the first 300 years. And I stay in that first 300 years before Christianity becomes the religion of the empire, because I could argue that power corrupts. And once power is in place, could the story of Jesus be corrupted? Well, fine. Let's go back to those 300 years before it becomes the religion of the empire, when there's a cycle of persecution and some rough tolerance and persecution again. Okay. It turns out in that 300-year period, there are more non-Christian voices recorded on ancient manuscripts than there are Christian voices. I mean, the church fathers, for example. So it turns out that you can look to non-Christian voices. There are Greek, Roman, Persian, Egyptian, the Gnostic gospel authors, Jewish authors. You can look at these authors and see, what do they say about you? Much of it is negative, but they have to build their negativity on the common true claims of Jesus, which they will then deny or say, well, this is a lot, whatever. But here's the point. It's clear the claims of Jesus were all out there. They just don't like them. And you could actually reconstruct the story of Jesus in its entirety from just the quotes of non-Christian voices in the first 300 years. That kind of impact cannot be said of any other historical character, period, let alone the first century. But it can be said of Jesus of Nazareth. Why? Again, why that guy? Right. Try to do that with Tiberius Caesar. Try to do that with any leader in the Roman Empire. You cannot do it, but you can do it with Jesus.
Can't be done with William Shakespeare. J. Warner Wallace is with us, author of many books. The newest is Person of Interest. We have about a minute and a half left. You get to the fuse moment. In the book, Person of Interest, you focus on this case of this man who killed his wife. You guys were able to successfully convict him despite there being no body. He took some steps after his wife's, quote, disappearance, which you have, I think, proven was a murder. He bought barrels. He took the opportunity to conceal evidence from the trunk of his car. In about a minute and a half post-resurrection, what, as you look at this explosion, J. Warner Wallace, personally speaking, what did it for you, the artist, the detective, this man who studied architecture, this intellect that you are?
Well, I'll tell you this.
Not the author, not the book pitch.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did it for you? What was the evidence of the explosion that turned you around?
Well, a couple of things. I will say that I got to a place where I believed that Jesus was who the Bible said he was, but that did not give me a belief in Jesus. That gave me a belief that Jesus was God, but not a trust in Jesus as God. That change for me occurs when I read through the New Testament and not looking for what it said about Jesus, but looking for what it said about Jim Wallace. And when I realized that it was describing me accurately and my need for a savior, I was just grateful that I had already done the work to figure out who that guy was. And I just had to connect those two dots. But in the end, the demons believe and they aren't saved. They know who Jesus is. They have belief that, but they don't have belief in. And so I needed to move from belief that to belief in. And that occurred for me when I started to, but I would never have trusted what it said about Jim until I first tested it to see if I could trust what it said about Jesus. And that's why my path had to go this way. I had to go through that investigation.
You're going to learn, folks, when you read the book, that Christ Jesus is more responsible for inspiration in music, in arts, in architecture, in science. All you people who tend to believe that Christians are anti-science, you're going to learn that no, in fact, universities exist because of the early Christians' dedication to understanding us, these human beings that the Gnostics and others had discounted our bodies as just filthy things. Here's an easy way to get the book. Text Todd, T-O-D-D, to 800-465-8770. We'll give you a link to the book you can purchase. J. Warner Wallace, what a joy to have you on the show. Thank you for using this unbelievable intellect that God gifted you with for communicating this way, sir.
Well, I can't agree with my intellect, but I will agree this. I've had a great time talking to you on this show. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you very much, Jay Warner. From one mystery to another mystery. J. Warner Wallace on the mystery of Jesus. Is it the Messiah or not? To now the temporal world. And that is this. We've been asking on the program now since he was installed into the Oval Office and for months lived behind a militarized fence, which was an act of political drama, just like the woke masks are an act of political drama. Just like we'll get to this later in the show, the world's most dangerous psychotic psycho, Tony Fauci, looking into a TV screen and saying, "Well, we've lost more children to COVID-19 than the flu," which is an easily disprovable, absolute lie from a psychopath. And I will now say I've determined he's a psychopath. And by the way, again, put me in front of a jury as a lawyer, I'll convict him of murder. And he's doing this to push the mRNA injections into the arms of little kids. So we've been wondering, who's running things? I mean, it's an important question. It's the White House. We have been brought up to believe that the president of the United States is the leader of the free world. And there was a time when that was the case. That was demonstrably the case. And when I say the leader of the free world, I also mean the leader of the people around him. Very famous story. Look at Reagan as a leader. He was thought of as this old buffoon, this senile old man. And he played people. And he also showed, no, I'm the boss. Period. Reagan did. You knew who was running things. Ronald Reagan ran things. He had a board of advisors and he listened to them. He consulted his rivals and he listened to them. He wrote to critics of his. He would have his staff bring him letters from the American people. And he would write back to people who were deeply critical of him. And there were those who said, well, that's a waste of time. And the president had said later in life, no, those are the bosses. I don't have time to write back to every American, but I can write back to one a day. Two stories that just typify this. The president came into conference room with House and Senate leaders, and they wanted him to do this or that legislation. And he walked into the room and he complimented a man's shoes, and then that man complimented his suit. And the president then went on to talk about his suits and how it was really Nancy who picked those out and asked about wingtips and, hey, are those comfortable? They're very, very beautiful. And that's, you know, hey, you look great. And they went through this discussion and people were laughing because President Reagan was an entertainer. He had the trick of charisma, because charisma can be a trick in the hands of masters. And President Reagan was that. Oh, my goodness, look at the time. I have to go. One of the Democrats, after the president walked out of the room, said, that old fool just sat here and talked about shoes. And one of the other Democrats said, no, idiot. The president just came in here, spent the exact amount of time he said he'd spend with you, and didn't say a word about the policy. Anytime you wanted to, you could have said, hey, you know, let's stop talking about shoes. But Reagan's presence was such that people wouldn't do that. The Berlin Wall. I'm sure you know the story. His staff said, you can't say, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. You can't say that. They continued to take it out of his speech. They continued to remove the line. Finally, the president just stopped pushing back. Reagan just stopped pushing back. And he went to give the speech. And the staff, the State Department, the statists, the deep state thought, oh, well, we've got the... And the deep state was nothing back then to what it is now. It was an attempted deep state. It was a growing deep state. Reagan stepped up to the microphone and he had his binder with their speech in it. He sat that down and then he reached inside his suit coat and pulled out the speech he was going to read. And the staff went nuts. Oh, my gosh, he's going to say it. He's going to say it. He's going to say it. Yes, because he's the president of these United States. He was, in fact, the leader of the free world. And I figured it out. I figured out who is actually running things. It's a gaggle of teen girls.
Democracies in the world. And we got a lot of work to do, so thank you all very much.
It's a gaggle of teen girls who run the country. You can. This is him with Boris Johnson. You can see in the eyes of this sad and senile old man, who sadly is put in this position of figurehead when there's plenty of 78-year-old men who are smarter than all of us combined and quicker than all of us combined. You can see in his eyes. Oh, I don't get to answer questions. And I know they're a gaggle of teen girls because adult women don't act that way. Adult women don't scream at the top of their lungs to shut their boss up. Okay, press. Okay, thank you, press. Thank you, press. That's not how adult women act. That's a gaggle of teen girls. That's who's in charge. You doubt me? Try it in your workplace. Try it. We have a quarterly meeting coming up. The radio station. No, businesses have quarterly meetings. What do you think happens to me if when one of our corporate leaders is answering a question from staff and I break in? Okay, thank you. We're done. Thank you. No. Thank you. Not only would I be done as genteel and as good a people as these corporate leaders are, they'd hit me, and rightly so. They'd slap me, and rightly so. There is no more proof that anyone should ever need that the man we're told to call President of the United States is nothing of the sort. He's a Lincoln log of a man. And I don't say that to be cruel. It's an issue of enormous importance. Who's running things? A gaggle of teen girls. What are their names? We're not going to tell you. President Reagan reached into a suit pocket, pulled out a speech, and said exactly what he wanted to say. They could have cut his mic, but he was president. They cut the mic of that figurehead constantly. They turn off the White House feed. When they're done, when he's done mouthing the words he's been programmed to mouth, my dear friends, this is what Soviet Russia presented their people with. A comforting, harmless old man who just likes to sniff some girls and reach around and grab their chests and pinch them. And his kids is a meth head, and they're in hawk to China. But man, it's just Joe being Joe. It's just Amtrak Joe, except it's not anymore. It's a suit with hair. We'll come back to Todd Herman on the Todd Herman Show and talk about the media's brand new hoax and Twitter's happy participation in continuing to perpetrate the hoax. Ah, nah, see, I recognize that. That's Social Distortion. Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show. There is a book coming out by Politico Reporter. We'll go through this tomorrow. Glenn Greenwald is an increasingly important journalist because he's a man of the left, and he is getting red-pilled. He's getting true woke. And this is happening because he is watching what's going on in the world around us and what's going on in his beloved world of journalism. So, Brady, the connection to this computer has decided to die. I do not have a connection. This happens periodically with this Microsoft computer. It just dies. There's nothing I can do to revive it within this segment. I would simply be going through and trying to do this segment while reopening the connection. So Brady Bones is filling in for Alex today. So I might need you to play some of the audio. This is a professional radio show. This is Brady getting you ready for live fire. Ready? Click the mocking fly for me, please, Brady, and play that from your location.
Leading up to the $1 million lottery drawing to entice more people to get the COVID shot.
The winning begin. The first drawings in the state's vaccine lottery actually happened today.
So we are answering your vaccine lottery question.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
In fact, that's a different mocking fly, but that's okay. That's okay. It's the same basic theme. The book that's coming out from the Politico Reporter has the following contention. The Hunter Biden story was true. It's not a story about Hunter Biden. It's a story about Joe Biden. It's a story about corruption. It's a story the Mockingbird media decided to hide and bragged about it in that famous article about how they stole the election, but it wasn't stealing, it was fortifying, in Time magazine. They made a unanimous decision to hide that from the American people. Facebook suppressed it. The person who announced that Facebook was suppressing it was a lifelong career Democrat apparatchik who made that decision. The Twitter people who said, we're going to ban this, we're not going to let people see it, are also lifetime Democrats. So they participated in election rigging. But they would never steal votes. That's a different topic. They would never hack computers. That's a different topic. They would never do those things. That would be a bridge too far. This tweet that we talked about yesterday was at 56,000 likes. So it was about 80,000 the last time I checked. It's a tweet from a guy who works for Al Jazeera, which is, of course, a country that means us well. Qatar, the country means the United States well. They're looking out for our best interests. They purchased, of course, Al Gore's TV network for a huge inflated amount of money. So he puts this tweet out and says that the Border Patrol has whips. They have whips. They're whipping people.
And of course, the imagery he's trying to draw back is the image of slave era whips. They're not whips. They're reins. It's how you steer a horse. That tweet, last time I checked, is still up. It's still being allowed on Facebook. Hey, look, there's no independent fact checkers I've been able to see. I don't have an internet connection, so I can't go check it out on my own. But there's no independent fact checkers coming to say, well, those were actually reins. That's how you steer a horse. One of the National Patrolmen's Association did put out a statement to say, how do you steer a car with a steering wheel? How do you steer a horse with a rein? Thank you for coming to our TED Talk. The Mockingbirds are playing a very predictable game with this. Brady, from your computer, which is connected to the internet, please click the audio source that says ABC, CBS smear Border Patrol agents with lies about using whips on illegals.
Questions over what they were holding. What can you tell us?
Yeah, Lester, White House spokesperson Jen Psaki called those images horrific to watch, but said she needed more information before officially making a comment. Meanwhile, Secretary Mayorkas here in Del Rio says it appears those were the rider's reins for the horse, but did promise to investigate. We're told that agents are not equipped with whips and ride horseback for their own protection.
That's what they say. That's the game. That's what they say? It's not what they say. The video is of a guy using reins to steer a horse. It's not what they say. It's what happened. It's a true fact. Brady, from your computer, which is connected to the internet, please click play on Circle Back Psaki, Jen Psaki addressing this.
I've also seen the video. I can't imagine what the scenario is where that would be appropriate. It's obviously horrific, the footage.
Jenny, go down to the border and chase people on foot. Jenny, why are you pretending the agents have whips? Why are you doing that? Honest to goodness, you could leave today, go get yourself a gig at the MSNBC and earn millions of bucks a year having a gig at MSNBC. You will leave eventually and go do that. You can go lobby. You can start a lobbying firm. You never even need to go to the office except Monday meetings. It's roll in around 10:30 a.m., a couple cocktails under the belt. Is it truly worth your soul, Jenny? Is it truly worth your soul to pretend that Border Patrol agents who are, in fact, protecting the rule of law in this country had whips? That's worth your soul? That's a fascinating trade, Jenny. And I do hope that you do enjoy the world you have gained, because apparently you have gained the world. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show.